Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Day of August 2014. This is the Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's where we that's where our home is. Home. Yes, home. And that's where you'll find the listen live button, which works just dandy if you're using a PC or some traditional computer type device. On the other hand, if you're using a mobile device, iThis, Android that, smart something or another, we recommend the apps from TuneIn and Stitcher. Either of those works just fine as long as we all understand and we all remember that any ads you see via said app are not at the direction or control of we at the Horn. That in fact they are there to provide revenue to the app distributor, and in no ways, no wise, goes toward the ongoing upkeep and support of the Horn. In other words, we don't see a nickel of the ad revenue. No, this is a listener-supported enterprise, a listener-supported undertaking. And in point of fact, exists entirely based upon the desire and insistence of the Horn Family Commune Congregation that this effort persist. As such, and that's the next part of it, if you want to help in that process, please do feel free to go to the PayPal button, also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and help us keep things going. There's nothing... Everything that comes in represents a sacrifice. We all know that. Whether it's a dollar or five or ten or a thousand, it is some form of sacrifice that we all make to keep this little community going together, to keep this little community engaged in a conversation, right? So at present, we're actually a few dollars ahead and would like to stay that way. So we'll try to raise $150 this evening. And we talked about this a little bit on Friday, and Sparky said, "No, Bob, go on, do it." So we're not going to take a night off. We're going to, because sooner or later we'll have a slow night or something like that. and we'll try to raise $150 this evening. 10 at 15, 15 at 10. $30 at $5, $5 at $30. Yeah, all kinds of stuff. That's just how it works. Also, of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You will find access to the chat room. And the chat room is a contingent of folks of great goodwill and good humor and good brains, good minds. Damn it. Oh, okay. I was seeing no audio messages, and I'm like, I'm streaming. Okay. Hey, I'm Brant. Good evening, everyone in the chat room, as I encourage people to come by and hang out and play and carry on and conversate and whatnot. A good Moran Monday evening to everyone in the room. Good evening, Anatole, Kathy, M. Brant, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, Paul. Good evening, Sergi. Good evening, Will. And, of course, good evening to our two inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. And, hey, there's Texas Betsy, the third in our triumvirate of indefatigable, inveterate chat room moderators. Looks like we're all. Okay, everybody's, you know, it's not just the 18th of August, it's more in freaking Monday on the horn. And I trust we've all got our hockey puck, we've all got our duct tape. Some of us like to go high fashion with the duct tape, with the bright and bold new colors that are available out there. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Good. So we have our duct tape. And we have our hockey puck, and we can understand that, yes, oh, dear me, yes. You know.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Here, behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear, you will behold, in great shock and in absolute dumbfoundedness, Morans of all variety. Right-wing Morans, Republican Morans, Libertarian Morans, Birthers, Deathers, Tenthers, Booger Eaters, John Bircher, did I get the Birchers? I got the Birchers. Morans. Yes, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, this is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell much. Yeah. Head for the hills and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
And it's a fact. It is a sure enough fact. It is hard enough. And I mean, I say that as somebody who's sitting behind a microphone somewhere. I'm not in Ferguson, Missouri. Neither are you, unless you haven't. But we've got St. Louis area listeners who are probably closer to Ferguson than they care to be. To sit behind a microphone and say, that's bad in Ferguson. Well, yeah, it is. But you can't even begin to approach a full comprehension of it. Or, you know, what people are going through. We're sitting out here and our guts are twisting. We're sitting out here and it looks like a wreck. And it only got worse over the weekend. There had been a modicum of calm restored, and then it all started back downhill again with the release of the strong-armed robbery tape, which mysteriously just showed up in police hands. Interestingly enough, the lawyer, the owner of the little store where whoever it was took the cigarillos, lawyered up, and the lawyer came out and said, hey, they didn't call the cops, they didn't tell any surveillance, but they didn't even turn in a criminal complaint. They've been a part of this community for years. What? Yeah. But nonetheless, you can't unring a bell. And that video was out there of some big guy, white T-shirt, short pants. Were they? I don't even remember now. The one thing I do remember is the red baseball cap. In fact, at one point in time, the fella turns, and you can see that it's a St. Louis Cardinals baseball cap. On the other hand, video has also been making the rounds of young Michael Brown dead in the middle of the street, left to lay there, and it seems to be that the simile that most people are using is like a dead dog, like a dog that's been shot in the street and just left, laid there for more than 4 hours. But as he laid there for more than 4 hours, and in the video that the cell phone video that shot, that is not, well, it's far less grainy, say, than the Zapruder film. And it's just a few blocks from the store where the alleged burgling of the cigarillos took place. You know what's not in the frame? The really glaringly obvious red St. Louis Cardinals baseball hat. It ain't there. And interestingly, the person who created the video footage, we're still learning we're trying to come up with a video, not we, me, or me and Ferg, or me and the fans, no, collectively, we're trying to come up with some way to refer to video that doesn't use the ancient antic footage. There is no more footage. What would it be, streamage? Pixelation? I don't know. But anyway, the one thing that is not there in the view of the video of Michael Brown's blasted dead body laying in the middle of the street is a red Cardinals hat. And it's not anywhere else in the scene because the camera pans left and pans right, pans back. It ain't there. Now, it is conceivable that he is laying on top of it, bleeding onto it, being dead on top of it. Seems kind of unlikely, though, seeing as how an autopsy report indicates that he was shot in the head at a downward angle and that the bullet went through his head, came out, and went back into him, striking his collarbone. Interesting angle. So all of that, and then, of course, the declaration of curfew, the calling in of the National Guard, and lots more trouble last night, and not just, as well, even to say not just is unfair, but not only trouble for the people who continue to stand in the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, demanding justice, demanding accountability, demanding transparency, demanding answers, demanding to know why the Ferguson Police Department and the rest of the governmental structure gave, for all we know, well, gave the cop a head start, you know, the one that shot Michael Brown 6 times. Well, no charges, no nothing. But lo and behold, trouble for journalists too. This might be a good time, this more in Monday, to remind folks that I forget who. Who noted it last week, maybe, was it you, Ron and Raleigh, that the United States is something like 47th for press freedom in the United States? Well, here's why, or here's part of why. According to a report from TPM LiveWire, um, during the unpleasantness of last night, can we co-opt the word troubles? During the troubles last night, the police decided to get macho with journalists again. And by that I mean, well, you'll hear what I mean. Mostly, there's an app out there called Vines, and it's used for really short little clips of video of people. Apparently, if what my son shows me is to be believed, short little video clips of people doing stupid things. Well, maybe it's grown up. Maybe it's come into its own. You remember Captain Ron Johnson that everybody got so excited about because he was going to bring peace and healing to Ferguson, Missouri? Well, it turns out he's not any too crazy about. About the journalists, either. Let's see if we can get this here.
You're under arrest. Put the handcuffs on him.
Yeah. You're under arrest. Put the handcuffs on him. How did that happen? That was Neil Munshy. Just cuffed and searched as we said we were leaving, as he asked. Johnson was following us, saying, bring the cuffs. There were three of us. He said the journo was under arrest. We started walking. He followed. He said, he's under arrest. Bring the car. It was tense. He seemed to realize it wasn't a great look, and he had them release us after cuffing and searching. Another cop was apologetic. Well, as long as they apologized. Robert Klemko, one of the three. Cops stopped us. We explained ourselves. They said to walk away. We said, why? They said, command center was attacked. I said, no, it wasn't. Captain Johnson said, walk away or be arrested. I started walking away. They followed and arrested us. Entire goal was to document police action toward protesters. Johnson wouldn't let us enter a visibly secured area. Rob Crilly tweeted, Captain Johnson furious at journalists getting in the way. Johnson has now ordered my handcuffs off, along with two others. I gather we are free now. And, by the way, it does turn out that some of the folks who sit behind desks and read the news occasionally like to go out and report it. Kudos, then, to Chris Hayes, who went to Ferguson, Missouri to report on the story. Riot cop to me just a few minutes ago, get back, or next time you're going to be the one maced. Amanda Turkle of Huffington Post was there as well, and she said, police getting mad when media goes up past their line tells us we'll get maced next time we do that. Well, shucks, Amanda. I mean, at least they're not going to shoot you six times. Well, wait, they might. And you might recall that the one night's audio was that documented the firings of the flashbangs and the tear gas, and he was the only one who had had live video, live broadcast. That was at from KARG, Argus Radio. A reporter there, Mustafa Hussein, was trying to do some Fourth Estate First Amendment journalism work. And here's what people heard live there.
Get the fuck out of here! You can't turn light off, and you're getting yourself with this!
The light's off!
Get the fuck off!
Get the
fuck out of here! You're in the wrong way!
Hey,
tell
him this! I got it!
Did you see the police?
No, you actually
saw
it.
I said,
did
you see the police?
I want to know the name of that officer.
Calm down. Don't turn that light on because they can't see.
Okay, the light is off, but he came running over here and told me, get the fuck out of here, I will shoot you with this.
Okay, sure did. He sure did.
I got it.
Why don't you just keep the light on?
Okay, the light's turned off, but the light is not a threat, like you guys keep saying.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to keep the light off, officer. I promise you, I will keep the light off. But I was just threatened by that officer, and I am a member of the media.
Where's the car at?
My car is right here.
Give me a car.
Okay, good. Tell him to bring it up.
I will bring it up with Captain Johnson. Okay, yes, please. Do whatever you want to happen. I want you, officer, I'm asking you to go get me the name of that officer. You just shoot me. I'm not pointing the finger, I'm talking to you. It's a point of the finger. Okay, I'm not pointing my finger, I'm asking you nicely. The point of the finger? Right, your officer just pointed a gun directly in my face and told me he was going to shoot me with it. I heard that. I would just like his name.
Are we done now?
You're pointing a finger, says the cop, when cops have been pointing sniper rifles and machine guns. Put that finger down! Turn that light off! They can't see when you have the light on. What does that mean, they can't aim? And by the way, the police captain, Captain Todd, never did follow up with the name of the police officer who reported, who threatened to murder that reporter on the spot where he stood. Still wondering, if, when, wherever the civil liberties organizations might be to file some Freedom of Information Act requests to find out the names of those officers whose photographs were taken aiming sniper rifles and machine guns at unarmed protesters. The world wonders. Hey, thanks very much to Sal, who is there most every evening. Thank you, Sal, for getting us started this evening. We're trying to raise our usual $150, and Sal has gotten us started. Thank you. Much appreciated. Yeah, the three journalists who were handcuffed, it's not like they came from the busted knuckle moral volcano and battle cry of freedom. Neil Munshy was from the Financial Times, Robert Klemko was from Sports Illustrated, and Rob Crilly was from the Telegraph. Those are the three that Captain Johnson had arrested for walking away not fast enough? Don't know. Yeah, just handcuffed him long enough to show him that, you know, we mean business here. It's been a long time since we've seen journalists behave like journalists in a situation such as this. But don't worry. There are, of course, people who are doing their dead level best to bring shame. Yeah, shame. To the craft. Guess who's gotten involved? Now he's not going to go out and get his hair mussed. I mean, there's a lot of money that goes into Sean Hannity's. It's a life support system for a haircut. And there's a lot of time and effort that goes into keeping it that way. So, what happens? Over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which seems to be sort of earning that these days, the life support system for a haircut invited none other than the man who did as much or more short of factually pulling the trigger to create this mess in Ferguson, Missouri. Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson was invited on to the life support system for a haircut show.
Welcome back. The Hannity controversy continues to swirl in Ferguson, Missouri tonight around the shooting of Michael Brown, an unarmed black teenager who was shot multiple times by a Ferguson City police officer last Saturday. Now, a friend of Michael Brown.
God, I think there's one of these days they're going to go. They're just going to turn Sean Hannity's hair into a topiary. I mean, it's amazing. You can't take your eyes off it.
Who says they witnessed the shooting, said that he was gunned down in cold blood. Take a look at what he said.
As he was running, the officer was trying to get out of the car, and once he got out the car, he pursued my friend, but his weapon was drawn. Now, he didn't see any weapon drawn at him or anything like that, us going for no weapon. His weapon was already drawn when he got out the car. He shot again, and once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air, and he started to get down. But the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots.
All right, joining me now to give his insight into what happened on that fateful Saturday afternoon, Ferguson City Police Chief Thomas Jackson. Mr. Jackson, welcome to the program. Thank you.
To give his version, Thomas Jackson, who wasn't there, who, for all we know, was the authority who sent the killer cop into hiding. Yeah. Do tell, Chief.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
I read your public comments. They differ dramatically from what we just heard. And that is that you said, in fact, the officer was injured, had a facial wound of some kind, and that, in fact, a struggle ensued over the officer's weapon and a shot was actually fired inside the car. Why is there such a dramatically different story being told here?
Well, Sean, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait until all the witnesses have been interviewed and all the forensic evidence has been examined before we're going to have a real true picture of what happened that day.
Time out. Why is this guy on Hannity? That's not a rhetorical question. Why is this guy on Hannity? Hannity. There is no... I don't think there's anyone in this country who follows news at all who doesn't understand the nature of the political divide that occurs between, say, Fox folks over there, you know, so far right that Barry Goldwater cringes in his grave. Right of Nixon. Right of... Jesus. Right of everybody. And yet this guy gladly accepts an invitation to appear on his program. That acceptance of the invitation is a thing in and of itself. This is a little piece of telegraphy. This is telling right-wing America whose side they're supposed to be on. Just remember, this segment was occupied a couple of months back by Cliven Bundy. Just saying.
I mean, the people who were there all have different perspectives of what happened, and I know that the St. Louis County Police Department is doing a very thorough investigation. They're going to interview everybody. They're going to look at the ballistics. They're going to look at the gunshot wounds, and they're going to come to a conclusion and present their findings to the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney, and at that point, we will have a final decision.
Should the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney be involved? Now, I'm not saying there's anything in particular wrong with the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney, but the prosecuting attorney handles law enforcement actions in state court in St. Louis County involving every law enforcement agency in that county, up to and including the state police, highway patrol, whatever we're calling them in Missouri, but also including the Ferguson Police Department. If it is as it is in many jurisdictions, the prosecuting attorney of St. Louis County is in fact, and I'm sure there's a huge staff, I understand that, but he or she is in fact the chief law enforcement officer of the county, which means law enforcement, St. Louis County law enforcement, will investigate St. Louis County law enforcement, and that's disturbing to say the least. Yeah. So everybody has their own perceptions. And what the chief here is telling you, Thomas Jackson, is that they're going to work on making sure that we get the right perception. Now understand the video of the young man of color. He's standing there, and it's in a live situation in the outdoors, and he's giving his account of what happened to his friend Michael Brown. And he's standing there in a sleeveless tank top T-shirt. Meanwhile, Thomas Jackson appears, shot from about viewed from about mid chest up. He's got his white police uniform on. He's got his badge showing. So we get an immediate juxtaposition and an immediate creation of who it is we're supposed to believe. Laws of the communicative laws of primacy and recency come into play here.
Either a shot was fired inside the police officer's car or it was not. Do we know for a fact?
It was,
That is a fact then. So there was a struggle for the gun as well.
That is a fact.
And are there witnesses that will say that there was a struggle for the gun?
I can't talk to what the witnesses are going to say, and the reason for that is...
There was. Yeah, I can't talk about it. Hey, where's the car? Has the community been told that the car which apparently is going, what happened in it is going to be a central issue to determining what really happened here. Has the community been told that the car has been impounded and is in the care, custody, and control with a complete, total, accurate chain of custody? And nobody involved with the investigation in the actual shooting or from the Ferguson Police Department can get at the car? See, there's a reason, whether it be hospital stuff, medical stuff, anything that becomes evidence in a case has to have a clear chain of custody so that you can say that everybody knew exactly what it was that was being held, how long it was held, where it was held, who had access to what was held. Because otherwise, there's no transparency. And any jury that would be impaneled in the matter could easily be either deliberately or negligently misled.
As soon as this happened, I called the county police chief and asked him to take over the scene and the investigation so I could be certain that there was no appearance of impropriety, and I would know that that a very thorough and complete investigation would be done and we could get to the truth of what happened.
Can you?
Okay, so the St. Louis County folks have it. Maybe. This is the same St. Louis County law enforcement that rolled in freaking tanks and brought in machine gunners and snipers and trained them on unarmed citizens engaging in their First Amendment rights. Are we clear? Yeah.
Shed any light on why so many shots were fired?
No, I can't. I don't actually know how many were fired.
Well, six.
This time.
Do you suspect this has been...
And you know what? As compared with some police shootings, that's not a lot of bullets. Sometimes unarmed black men in this country get 52 bullets fired at them. Sometimes over 100. This was just six. Never mind that, you know, one is enough. And with regard to chain of custody, Jack in Shreveport points out, yeah, and, of course, that chain of custody thing assumes that someone's buddy doesn't allow someone that shouldn't be there access to the evidence. Hey, they'd never do that. No, 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 no. I mean, come on. Right? There's that old saying out there that truth is the first casualty of war. It now appears that truth is the first casualty of police shootings. Truth is the first casualty of politics. Maybe we can just take off all the dependent clauses and just say truth is the first casualty. No, that's not either, because Michael Brown was the first casualty. Has anyone asked, because it is impossible to follow all the coverage here, has anyone posed the question, is the officer still in state? Because if it has been posed, I haven't heard it. Back to Chief Jackson. I wonder if they call him Stonewall. His name's Thomas Jackson, you know.
Reported 10 shots or more?
It's possible that many shots were fired.
Well, you had to. I assume you found shell casing. You know a certain amount. Do you have a range in which you know?
No, I can't talk to the evidence at all. Okay. That's the St. Louis County Police Department's investigation.
I understand that the police officer, there's been a lot of death threats against him, a lot of volatility. You've got the new Black Panther Party. Louis Farrakhan has spoken out.
Oh, for pity's sakes. They found some guys that, yeah, are you the new Black Panther Party? I'm him. And now, of course, they're showing something that's scrawled that says the only good cop is a dead cop. We don't even have any way of knowing that was actually Ferguson, Missouri. Because, you know, it's Fox. That could be the dumpster behind an apartment complex in, you know, Queens.
Out the Reverend Al Sharpton is there. You've had the chanting. The only, you know, we have a sign up there. The only good cop is a dead cop. There's been rioting and looting, etc., going on. That has prevented you from releasing the name of the officer. Some have questioned whether the wisdom of that, the public's right to know versus the safety of the officer. You're balancing that.
I am.
And objection, leading the witness. Hint to future journalists. In asking people questions, ask them questions unless you're not interested in actually doing journalism and you're only there to put forward a specific point of view. Ask them questions that do not suggest the answer you want them to give. Because that's not journalism. That's propaganda? We'll just go back. Let's check out Edward R. Murrow Knott again.
And looting, etc., going on, that has prevented you from releasing the name of the officer. Some have questioned whether the wisdom of that, public's right to know versus the safety of the officer. You're balancing that?
I am, and that's exactly what we did. We had originally believed that.
Why not just let Hannity say that? I mean, because in other words, not in other words, but in those very words, Hannity just became his own witness, his own source. It is, of course, classic Fox behavior.
You know, we had an obligation to release that information to the public and to the press. But what happened is another officer's name was released as being the officer involved in the shooting. He was not, but his picture was put up on the Internet. His Facebook page was hacked, and death threats started coming in. So that's when we weighed the benefit of releasing the information right now versus the safety to the officer, his family, and his neighbors. And the rest of the police department. So we decided to delay the release of the name.
Let me ask you this one simple question. Based on your preliminary investigation,
sure.
And you...
It's coming from a simple guy. It's kind of got to be a simple question, doesn't it?
Speaking with other officers that were on the scene, as I understand it, correct?
Yes.
Then are you convinced that the officer involved in the shooting was within department guidelines in protecting himself?
I can't answer that question until I have the final report from the county. I really don't want to say anything that I might know or that I think.
Unless it's something part of something. Oh, definitely fired inside the car. Definitely. So Hannity says what he wants the Fox people to hear, the Fox audience. Did you hear that, Marvelline? And the chief says, well, you know, I mean, I can't say.
When I say something, I want to say what I know.
But you are certain that an altercation occurred and a shot was fired within the car, meaning Mr. Brown was in the car.
Wow! A shot, but you are certain a shot was fired, and a shot was fired within the car, meaning Mr. Brown was in the car. Let's just make Sean Hannity the police chief of Ferguson.
At some point.
He was, yes.
And he was,
yes,
in other words, true. He wasn't handcuffed in the car. He went in the car of his own volition. Is that yours?
Yes.
All right.
See, it's kind of a mark of a non-journalist when, in order to get answers, you have to give the answers to the source before the source gives them back to you. Yeah, Stockton Larry in the chat room pointing out, yes, the KKK is, in fact, already raising money for the officer who did the shooting. And in regard to the officer, Texas Betsy tells me, as of yesterday, the officer's on paid leave. Don't know where he is, though. Nobody does. If this is all going to be turned over to the St. Louis County prosecutor, doesn't it become, as the chief law enforcement of the officer of St. Louis County, doesn't the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney then have an affirmative duty to at least let the citizenry know that a man who may end up being charged with murder, although the likelihood of that, well, if you, it's right up there with winning the lottery, or being struck by lightning. Isn't it incumbent upon the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney to at least, in the name of transparency, say the officer has not left the state, he has not left the long arm of the law, okay? Yeah, as Steve points out here, what we have here is a classic case of, Mr. Hannity, when did you stop beating your wife? Yeah, exactly. So now that, hey, look, a new verb, everybody. Chief Jackson's been Bundyized. There it is. If you want, this guy is an actual newsmaker. If you want to produce news with him, you should theoretically he should be on a news program. Not an opinion program. Chief Jackson should not have been booked, even on Fox, on a program in which the tagline out to the next break is coming up Ann Coulter. Or, you know, some other right-wing harridan. You get my meaning. I have a police story here. It comes from someone who wishes to remain anonymous. I'll wait just 1 second. Okay, we've got some clarification from Sergi. Thank you, Sergi. That's the point of asking questions. Subject line, the red cap. So before I just now set off for the store here, I watched the NBC Nightly News coverage. The shot they showed of the body did indeed show the red Cardinals cap lying beside Michael Brown. So it was him. Well, not even necessarily that, Sergi. We know that Michael Brown was a all you can extrapolate from that is that Michael Brown was a guy who had a red St. Louis Cardinals cap, which is a population that probably includes includes upwards of 90% of the males, black, white, and otherwise, in St. Louis County. Sergi noting it still doesn't justify the shooting. No, it doesn't justify the shooting. And in point of fact, it must be remembered that they have already declared, they being the police department, that the officer who did the killing knew nothing about the convenience store footage or the video. Didn't know about it. No idea. It's not like there was an APB out there for guy with package of stolen cigarillos. The convenience store video is a red herring. And if not a red herring, then a deliberate attempt to cast aspersions upon someone who was shot six times when there wasn't even an arrest warrant out for him, who was unarmed, who, as he was executed, had his hands in the air and was dressed. Robert from Australia with a question. Bob, I'm assuming the police cars in Ferguson have dashboard cameras, but in this case it was broken, so there's no audio or video of the incident? I don't know. I do know that in every jurisdiction where cop cams have been made mandatory on the person of the police officer and in the automobile, police brutality claims have dropped dramatically. Back to the anonymous email. Just sort of let this sink in. I'm listening to the podcast again from Thursday. It is situations like this that have really begun to make me rethink my liberal progressive inclinations. It also harkens me back to something that happened to me. My partner and I were waiting on a train. I was late, and several trains had passed us by. I picked up a courtesy phone on the train platform and, admittedly quite angry, said, "Where the fuck is the goddamn train?" I slammed down the phone, and I later found out a piece of it broke off the cover for the receiver. The train then arrived. My partner and I got on ready to go. As we sat there, I realized they were holding the train while about a dozen cops searched for, as it turned out, me. They pulled me off the train with my partner. They then began to escort me to a cell where I spent the next several hours. On the way to that cell, well, that's what led me to where I am today. I remember one cop, and these were what I call sort of cops, Port Authority police who patrol the areas in and around the World Trade Center, bridges in and out of New York City and the airports. Sorry, but you'll have to forgive me if I don't think of these cops, or any cops for that matter, as heroes. Yelling at me and threatening to throw me on the ground if I didn't walk right. I also watched as they berated and threatened my partner, as he was merely following to see what would happen to me so he could get my belongings I was carrying. After several hours in that cell with other dangerous people who, I kid you not, were there for fair jumping. As an aside, don't get me wrong, I think people should be held accountable for what amounts to stealing from people who do pay, putting aside the question of the affordability of the train, not paying. However, to lock people up in a holding cell when real criminals like Dick Cheney and the executives of Patriot Coal run free puts this in perspective. The cops marched me handcuffed through the station into a paddy wagon to the local real police station, fingerprinted me, and took mugshots. After they gave me the summons, I had to show up for court. Then I realized that they had retaliated against me by putting my case in the felony docket for an offense called criminal mischief, which I found out is less than a parking ticket on the hierarchy of offenses in New Jersey. When I got to the court, the judge looked at me and asked why I was there, telling me that I was in the indictable offenses court. As an aside, in New Jersey, there's no distinction between misdemeanors and felonies. The distinction lies in indictable versus non-indictable offenses. And they had wrongly placed me there. Once I got to the right court, after about 6 months, the case was dismissed after I made restitution for the precious fucking telephone at the rate of over $250. This whole situation messed me up. Seeing what they did to me, but more so seeing what they did to my partner, probably came close to causing me to drop out of school. While in my last semester, I couldn't sleep. I could hardly study. I was prone to fits of uncontrollable sobbing. The whole thing put me into therapy. I had to walk through that train station every day past those cops who did that, all for breaking a telephone. I remember the cop who told me to walk right to this day. I remember seeing him and thinking, well, thinking unpleasant thoughts. Fast forward a number of years to the Occupy demonstrations in Zuccotti Park. I was working about 2 to 3 blocks from there. I was a daily witness to marches and protests in and around Wall Street. I never will forget the day I exited the subway, only to witness what could only be described as a scene out of 1941 Nuremberg. Scores of cops dressed all in black with their submachine guns, military helmets, Kevlar, and flak jackets, while helicopters hovered overhead and all gathered to protect us from the ragtag group of people marching with big, bad, menacing signs with slogans on them. I saw the abusive, tough guy cops standing on the sidewalks, clearing people off, illegally, randomly demanding identification from people on the street. Fast forward to Ferguson, Missouri. As bad as I thought what they did to me was, and what I saw in Zuccotti Park, the Ferguson scenes are worse. This really is right out of Nazi Germany, 1942. This is Budapest, 1956. The Prague Spring, 1968. I came to the conclusion long ago about the death of democracy, and more poignantly, that it's a system that can't work on any scale, this system. It is for this reason that I find myself increasingly anarchist. I may even be a libertarian. As much as I despise the decision, I have come to almost welcome the Hobby Lobby decision. I have come to the conclusion I would like to opt out of much of what government does. I would like to opt out of police protection, fire protection, military protection, and any number of government services. I am well aware of where this leaves me. I hate the libertarian, it's all about me notions. However, I've come to see government not as a representative entity expressing the will of the people, but nothing more than a self-perpetuating leviathan that eventually, in every case, will take on a life of itself and will, 100% of the time, end up oppressing the same people it purports to represent. Decisions like Hobby Lobby are gross. A corporation with religious beliefs. A corporation can opt out of laws based upon those beliefs. Fine. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I don't like and feel uncomfortable with this position. I wish I could say that I felt good about paying taxes because it was nothing more than a way we, as a body politic, come together to pool our resources to solve problems we couldn't on our own. However, that notion is long past and the reality never existed. I'm sick of paying taxes for machinations to go and kill people in far-off lands who never did anything to me. I'm sick of paying taxes to protect our shores from a slew of bogeymen who don't actually exist. We can't find, but by God, they're out there. I'm sick of paying taxes for police who are nothing but organized thugs with the imprimatur of the state to call themselves police, but are in actuality nothing more than an American version of the Tonton Macoute. Or insert the name of any thuggish militia here. I'm sick of being a coward citizen of this not dying but dead empire. I'm sick of supporting its murderous and oppressive ways, signed, a despondent citizen. In this country, everything can go sideways in an instant. I'm reminded of the number of cases where police go to the wrong residence and create mayhem and havoc and chaos and sometimes death. Years ago, the seminal case on the topic from the Supreme Court was called U.S. v. Leon. I've never forgotten it, because U.S. v. Leon says that the cops get a pass no matter how much awful shit they do, as long as they claim they were doing so in good faith. It's called the good faith exception to the Fourth freaking Amendment. So as long as the police don't intentionally barrel through the door and kill your child by mistake, too bad. And in point of fact, I had a note just before airtime from Ron in Raleigh. He said, the ongoing violence in Ferguson, Missouri made me think of an article I read in Popular Mechanics, of all places, several years ago. Being a pack rat, I hunted around and found the article. Obviously, Popular Mechanics made the connection also. Yeah, no kid, it's kind of blew my mind. The article was originally published in 2006. It is by Glenn Harlan Reynolds, again, at Popular Mechanics. I remember when Popular Mechanics was a magazine you could go to and learn and you know, hobbyist and amateur types could learn to, you know, make cool stuff. But in 2006, SWAT overkill, the danger of a paramilitary police force. Glenn Harlan Reynolds writes, soldiers and police are supposed to be different. Soldiers are aimed at enemies from outside the country. They are trained to kill those enemies and their supporters. In fact, killing people and breaking things are their main reasons for existence. Police look inward. They're supposed to protect their fellow citizens from criminals and to maintain order with a minimum of force. It's the difference between Audie Murphy and Andy Griffith. But nowadays, police are looking and acting more like soldiers than cops, with bad consequences, and those who suffer the consequences are usually innocent civilians. The trend toward militarizing police began in the 60s and 70s when standoffs with the Black Panthers, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and the University of Texas Bell Tower gunman Charles Whitman convinced many police departments that they needed more than 38 specials to deal with unusual high-intensity threats. In 1965, Los Angeles Inspector Daryl Gates, who later became police chief, signed off on the formation of a specially trained and equipped unit that he wanted to call the Special Weapons Attack Team. The name was changed to the more palatable Special Weapons and Tactics. SWAT programs soon expanded beyond big cities with gang problems. Abetting this trend, remember this is 2006, abetting this trend was the federal government's willingness to make surplus military equipment available to police and sheriff's departments. All sorts of hardware is available, from M-16s to body armor to armored personnel carriers and even helicopters. Lots of police departments grabbed the gear and started SWAT teams, even if they had no real need for them, because there was grant money involved. The material was free, and it was fun. I don't blame the police. Heck, if somebody gave me a Bradley fighting vehicle to play with, I'd probably start a SWAT team too, so long as I didn't have to foot the maintenance bill. Thus, the Sheriff's Department in landlocked Boone County, Indiana, has an amphibious armored personnel carrier. According to that county's sheriff-elect, the vehicle has been used to deliver prescriptions to snowbound elderly residents and to provide protection during a suspected hostage situation. Jasper, Florida, with 2,000 inhabitants and two murders in the last 12 years, obtained seven M-16s from the federal government, leading an area newspaper to run a story with the subhead, three stoplights, seven M-16s. The combination of these two factors has led to some tragic mistakes. No-knock drug raids involving dynamic entry. Yes, that is the Orwellian term for just barreling through the door and, well, devil take the hindmost. Dynamic entry. Where the wrong house has been targeted, or where the raid was based on informants' tips that turned out to be just plain wrong. September 23rd, 2006, a SWAT team descended on the home of a farmer and his schoolteacher wife in Bedford County, Virginia. I was held at gunpoint, searched, taunted, led into the house, A.J. Knuckles wrote to his local paper. I was scared beyond description. I feared there had been a murder, and I was a suspect. When the couple's three children came home, the police grilled them, too. The family was held under guard for 5 hours as the SWAT team ransacked the place, seizing computers, a digital camera, DVDs, and VHS tapes. 10 days later, the cops returned the belongings. It turned out that a special anti-child porn police unit had made a mistake while tracing a computer address and sent the SWAT team to the wrong home. Good faith! When a narcotics task force raided a duplex apartment in Jefferson Davis County, Mississippi, no, really, in 2001, they arrested one tenant, then burst into the adjacent apartment of Corey May. Thinking a burglar had broken into the bedroom he shared with his toddler daughter, May shot the officer fatally. May was convicted of murder and sentenced to death. However, his sentencing was overturned, and a motion for a new trial is still pending. That was 2006. I don't know what happened. Only the sentencing was overturned. Not the conviction of murder. Hey, Gadsden flag wearing, tricorn hat wearing, don't read to me, teabaggers? Yeah. He defended Feedham and got charged with murder into the process. Oh, don't get me started on the damn free Feedham Protector Woods. Wolverines! We've known, as this article points out, we've known that this was a problem for quite some time. And there's no way to predict what particular set of circumstances will cause the nation to finally look at itself. And I maintain that we might look at ourselves once in a while, but we don't take a really, really good look. Newtown? Connecticut? Anybody? Bueller? Twenty first graders chopped to pieces, and we couldn't even get background checks at gun shows out of it. Wow. So I understand our anonymous correspondence. Frustration. I understand what is meant by I have come to the conclusion I would like to opt out of much of what government does. But, you know, the thing is, the Supreme Court took care of that little problem. Remember, the Quakers wanted to opt out of war because of their deeply and closely held religious beliefs. And the Supreme Court said, screw you, baby, you're paying. It was only when it came time to take a big steamer on women that those deeply religiously motivated members, the rats, said, well, hell yeah! Hobby Lobby don't want to pay for slut medicine? Well, Jesus don't want them to neither, and neither do we. A 9-0 majority ruled that Sweet Granny McCullen's rights to assault a woman seeking medical treatment outweighed the woman's right to access a constitutional right of her own, to wit, abortion. You can't opt out. You can leave. You can try to leave. If you have a means of earning a living in another country, maybe that other country will let you in. But if you're much past, say, 40, 45, forget it. They're not interested. Some catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. Yeah, yeah, Jim, you're right. Jim writes, redolent of A Clockwork Orange? Yeah. Redolent of 1984? Yeah. Redolent of Brave New World? Yeah. Redolent of Blade Runner? Yeah. Redolent of everything that Philip K. Dick ever wrote? Yeah. So we got lots more to talk about, without a doubt. Because we haven't yet gotten around to, I mean, you maybe you thought that Sean Hannity was the right wing response to Ferguson. He's a flaming knee-jerk liberal compared to some of this other stuff. And it's on the way. Oh, I had a note. And we'll take a break in a minute, but I had a note relative to fundraising. From our buddy Steve. He said, I wish I could do more, but I'd like to make a $25 challenge. So there it is. We're trying to raise $145 more dollars, and Steve will double the next $25 that comes in. Thank you, Steve. Much appreciated. Thank you very kindly. You know, of course, that this is conversation radio. That means there needs to be some conversation involved. The number is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. A reminder, we have never lost a first-time caller on this program. Nobody's ever just fainted from the terror of it all. If you've never even called a radio program, this is a great place to get comfortable with the idea. So maybe give it a try. Why not? And it doesn't have to be about Ferguson. It can, be about, well, just about anything you want to bring to the table. let's do take a little break. Maybe some folks will jump in and answer Steve's challenge. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Ironic DJing there, maybe. Classic from a classic from Cheap Trick, Dream Police. Interesting point being made in the chat room right now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It was Will, not Lottie. Bob, is this song you're offering to the Goddess of Irony? Yes. Yes. But a point being made that this whole thing in Ferguson is really, really the thing in Ferguson. God, what do you call it? What do you call it? The fascism on open display in Ferguson? Oh, see, he uses those shrill words. No, but it's another nail in the coffin of the United States' ability to point to human rights abuses anywhere in the world and say, naughty, naughty. Vladimir Putin is probably giggling. No, there really are more angles and more stories, for God's sakes, for the evening. But let's right now let's escape to the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. I'm connected. I'm there. Are you there? All my wires are in the right place. Yep, sure are. All right, so didn't happen after all. Well, okay, then let's continue. Just with a couple of other angles. Wait a minute. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay, that was me a moment ago. This is Dan in Syracuse.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm fine. I was a little bit surprised that I couldn't get through to you. I heard you, but in any case, you know, a couple of things have been building up, especially since your programming last week. And, you know, I was wondering, with respect to the allegation that this kid was in a grocery store, and I'm talking about the young man in Ferguson.
Yeah.
And he allegedly pilfered some cigars.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not heard any bit of evidence that that's actually so.
That's because there isn't any.
I mean, wouldn't you think if this happened just moments before he was gunned down, that he would have had them on his person or at least smelled like a cigar? And if that was so, wouldn't the cops be all too anxious to declare that to be so?
Well, but they put themselves in a bind because they let his they announced that the police officer who did the killing had no idea that there was an issue regarding the convenience store. Now there's a downright mystery as to how the convenience store footage got out, because like I said, the convenience store owners lawyered up and sent their lawyer out to say, we didn't give the police the surveillance footage. We didn't call in a report, nothing. They showed up. So,
yeah.
So presumably, I mean, it's the only conclusion you can really draw. During the 4-plus hours that they're leaving Michael Brown to bleed out into the street, they're doing what? I mean, some of them got there in time to put the plastic police tape up, right, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's footage of several of them milling around and one guy just kind of standing over his body. But they put themselves in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a way, and this was presumably a way out. But then it fell apart when they had to admit that no, the police officer didn't know.
Yeah, and but you know, I think the first part of them putting themselves in the box was this allegation that there was grappling inside the cop car and a scuffle for the gun.
Yeah.
Now, cop cars around here have a barrier between the front and rear seats.
Right.
So if this kid was placed in that cop car, young man was placed in that cop car, he would have been placed in the rear seat, theoretically shielded from the front seat and the officer and his weapon.
Wait a minute. See, that's not how it's supposed. No, that's not what you're not. You're not think. You're not thinking with your white privilege filter, Dan.
Okay.
No, this young man came over, and the way you're supposed to think about it is that this defender of public safety pulls up and tells the young man to get up on the sidewalk, at which point the young man says, I don't have to listen to you or whatever, and goes over to wring the cop's scrawny neck because he's a really big, scary guy.
Uh-huh.
And then the cop, obviously, because this was in the early, promulgated the story that he reached into his car and tried to grab his weapon, because I'm pretty sure that police officers don't drive around with their service weapon laying on the seat next to them. Have you ever known a police officer to do that? Because I haven't.
No.
So, big, young, scary black man comes over, and he reaches in to get his gun, and a scuffle ensues, and the gun gets fired, and the officer gets the gun, and the man's running, and he shoots, and then he has to keep shooting. You see?
Yeah.
Be afraid, white America. Be very afraid.
Right. Yeah. And this was reported either by you or Malloy or both of you that so far this year, a little more than halfway through, there are 600 police killings.
Yeah, that was me Friday night.
Yeah.
Now, that's persons of all color.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, I get it. And like you said Friday, they weren't necessarily all innocents. But it's a big number.
Yeah, it is.
It's even in a country of 300 million people.
That's a little less than 90 people a month.
Yeah, right. Which means one every three every day.
Mm-hmm.
Three a day.
And if you pay attention, if you go wandering around the news looking for this kind of stuff, you'll find that number borne out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
I got a story here, not to take our mind away from anything, but I got a story here. Out of Mississippi, and it's a Reuters story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's from a real news agency.
Yep.
It's out of Smith County, central Mississippi, and Jeffrey Daniels has been charged with aggravated assault. He is charged with that for having beaten and shot a man named Craig Wilson. Now, it's a little complicated. Jeffrey Daniels became angry at Craig Wilson, who is the boyfriend of his mama. He became angry because mama and boyfriend were visited by that couple's mixed-race grandchildren.
Okay.
All right. That according to Jeffrey Daniels' mama. So they got into it, and he beat the tar out of Craig Wilson and shot him in the gut. Now, here's the paragraph that just made me kind of, huh? The Reuters author writes, because the victim and suspect are both white, the attack cannot be classified as a hate crime under Mississippi state law. Yeah, you see? See what? Yeah, yeah, I can tell. It's doing the same thing for you.
Yeah.
2 weeks before this incident, somebody burned a cross in front of their house. I'm getting a little frustrated, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I am, and I know, I mentioned my age, and people older than me who are part of the Horn family go, oh, come on, Bob. But I'm 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in 1963. I was born when churches were being bombed, crosses were being burned, and I was born in the South where it was happening. By 1965, there was some hope that there was going to be some relief through the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
By 1968, Dr. King has been murdered. I never knew a day, but it felt like there was progress being made. It really, really did. Because I started first grade. There was no kindergarten back then. I started first grade in an integrated classroom, so nobody that I grew up with knew anything but going to school with everybody in the room. It wasn't Lily White. It was what we knew. It was what was supposed to, it was supposed to be the front end of the change that was so desperately needed. And now I am 51 years old. It is 2014. And it feels like we have not moved a damn foot from 1963.
And I was born 10 years before you, and it feels the exact same way to me.
I mean, you want to kick furniture, but the thing is, there were moments when progress was being made, weren't there, Dan?
There were. There absolutely were. And Chris Hedges has stated that, of course, there's progress in the history of mankind, but there are also periods of regression. And I think we've been in a long one, a long downward slope.
And that's my next question, Dan. Doesn't that period of really significant regression begin with a greasy-headed old B-movie actor named Ronald Reagan?
You know, I go back before him. I think that Richard Nixon gave us stonewalling, and then he was pardoned by a guy, and I think that pardon was key. I mean, I remember being 74? I was 21 years old. I was outraged that Ford pardoned this guy, calling it an end to our national nightmare or whatever phraseology he used. I was outraged by that. And then along comes Reagan a half a dozen years later, and we have plausible deniability. And at every step of the operatives in Nixon's White House get recycled, just like Clinton's got recycled. To the Obama administration, but Nixon's guys were recycled, and they showed up as, well, later on, VP Dick Cheney. Roger Ailes was a part of that White House as well. We have one of the guys that was a conspirator that had Gordon Liddy, who had a radio program, nationally syndicated, and they've purloined the national conversation, and that has bent things around. And that's a good segue into a few remarks that Rush Limbaugh made when you aired him late last week. Talk about kicking the furniture. I was outraged when he proposed to speak for me, and not my philosophy, but my attitude. And it's that subtle little word change that just stuck in my craw like a barbed hook. You know, right wingers have philosophies and we have attitudes. Well, if someone has an attitude, doesn't it imply a bad attitude?
Oh, absolutely.
But you use that word deliberately. And then he talked about how we were sad and dark and depressed. And then another expression that he used was that whenever liberals get something, yeah. Like we're all on welfare,
yeah,
or food stamps, you know, that whole whenever we get something, we're not satisfied. I was so goddamn outraged at that, and his listeners, you know, his acolytes listen and they absorb this crap. And I, on the occasion while I actually engage in a right winger in my neighborhood, they parrot the same crap. It's verbatim, and I know where they get it.
Well, they're authoritarians. They are not made for independent thought, Dan.
I know.
I guess the reason I pegged Reagan as the beginning of the long downward spiral is the image that I have, because see, when he was doing what he was doing at about the same time I was the same age you were when the Nixon thing happened.
Sure.
I guess impressions are made on people in young adulthood. It sticks with us, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I was at approximately the same age, or near enough, when he wandered his way down to Neshoba County, Philadelphia, Mississippi,
yep.
You know, the home of the Klan, to dog whistle up Morning in America.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got qualified by a neighbor of mine, an old friend, dog walker. I met her when she was walking her dog and I was walking my dog, and I ran into her about a year or so ago, and she qualified me when she asked me what I thought of Reagan, and I told her, well, you know, Reagan made some people happy, but a lot of people suffered during his administration. And she said, okay, I can talk to you.
Beautiful.
But there are some thinking people out there. Hey, I want to also, you know, it's come up a couple of times about that cop that took the test.
And yeah.
He's too smart to be a cop.
Yeah.
I think that was in Connecticut.
Was it?
I believe so. That's my recollection. But you and someone else maybe mentioned that you thought it was New York, but it really wasn't New York. But, you know, one more thought before I leave you, Bob. You know, we know that there's going to be a spark. There's going to be a spark that creates something. And this might be the, you know, what was it that kicked off the Arab Spring? Was it a Tunisian street vendor that got shaken down by a cop and just got so disgusted and tired of it that he immolated himself? Am I correctly recalling the event?
I'd recall something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah. This might be the Tunisian street vendor. American style, because
the person that I have associated this incident with more than any other is Emmett Till.
Yeah.
Because of the graphic similarities involved. After Emmett Till had been tortured and killed in Mississippi, when they finally got his body back to Chicago, his mama insisted
open casket.
That there be an open casket funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
So that people could see what white Mississippi had done to her baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you stand that there's a similar effect on the national consciousness of leaving young Mr. Brown's body lay in the street for hour after hour after hour in the blazing hot August sun of St. Louis County?
Yep, I do. The behavior of the cops toward the reporters, you know, it's also sort of reminiscent of Chicago in 1968, because that was acknowledged to be a police riot well after the fact.
Exactly, and I've been waiting for somebody to mention that. These, you know what? The people standing in the streets with their hands in the air are not rioting. They are gathering in assembled protest, which is guaranteed their as a right under the First Amendment.
Yeah.
The police, on the other hand, are rioting.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've boxed themselves in. And by the way, when a cop shows up on Sean Hannity in full dress uniform, it is because a guy that trained me a long time ago at the phone company and then went on to his career in management told me that dark suits connote authority. So that when people in authority are in their dress blues or dress blacks, whatever they, you know, whatever dark color they're wearing, it is a subtle indication of their authority. But yeah, of course they deck out with all their
and generally uniforms in that regard. I mean, Chief Thomas Jackson was wearing, I guess the police in Ferguson wear white tops, and so he's there, but you know, the badge is prominently displayed and it's obvious mm-hmm. that, you know, authority, man, authority.
Yeah it reeks of it. One last thing. I want to make a music recommendation that you and everybody listening to me right now go to YouTube and look up Guy Forsythe, Long, Long Time. That's an excellent song about the way he his images of America when he grew up, America versus the communists and America, cowboys and Indians, you know, all the myths that we all grew up with from little itty-bitty babies. And the lyric and the images on the screen are important to pay attention to both. And one of my favorite sections of the song is he's stuck on a highway behind a two-story pickup truck that can roll over everything except a two-story pickup truck in front of it. And I thought, you know, as the guy that insists on driving a passenger vehicle, this is beautiful because I get behind these rolling roadblocks and it's very frustrating. I can barely drive defensively. But he also makes reference to getting off the interstate and seeing nothing but Starbucks and Walmarts. And his comment about that is that we don't live around this mess, we live under it. And those two brief lyrics are indication of the entire song. It's a lot of fun, and I know you're gonna relate to everything that this guy says in the lyrics and the images. So long time Guy Forsythe, I highly recommend that tune.
I've got it queued up for the next bumper, Dan.
Okay, buddy.
And I wanna thank you personally for your help from Friday. It was huge.
You know, I was glad that it got such quick response. And the reason I do that during the duration of the program, Bob, is because I modeled it after public broadcasting. But it seems to me that if you're going to, you know, if you're able to do it and you're willing to do it and you're going to do it during the program. Don't dawdle overnight and then forget it the next day. So it's for the effect and for the result. And so it's my pleasure. I can do it when I can, and so I was gratified by the result. And you are more than welcome. This program, by the way, is a big, big piece of my evening education as well as entertainment. So it's my pleasure to be able to help out.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I do
appreciate
it. Okay,
buddy. Good talking to you.
Dan, have a good evening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Dan calling from Syracuse. A lot of food for thought there. A lot of food for thought indeed. And I do. I really, really do. There's other stuff. I feel like I need to. I want to make sure I get to it. But I want to keep. I want to. Cause see, conversations like that and like we have on this program, in a way, I probably don't fit the mold of what talk radio should be. Because, at least not from the right-wing perspective, because I don't I don't like to pontificate. And I don't look in the mirror every morning and go, God, you're awesome. Yeah, even with half your brain tied behind your back, and talent on loan from God. The conversation is where the magic happens, at least in my world. So no matter how many clips I want to play, I want to get the conversation going and keep it going. So let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh man, you guys were talking about what's happening. And as they say, what really scares me is this is the second time I've seen it in my lifetime. How old was Emmett Till? What year was that?
He was 15, and that's the mid 50s.
What was it?
That's the mid-1950s. He was 15 years old.
Yeah, because I was still younger than that, but I, of course, remember, you know, at the time it happened and trying to figure out how it happened and why it happened. The thing about you and I, Bob, is we can sit down and we can look at what happened in the past and we can see, you know, what happened.
Yeah, and like I was saying with Dan, Bill, I just had this moment of intense frustration a couple of days ago, because when you get to a point where there's as much or more life behind you as there is in front of you potentially, and it seems like no progress has been made, it's tear inducing.
Absolutely. When you can't do a thing about it.
In the 14th century, oh God, here we go again. In the 14th century, when the Black Plague struck Europe.
Yep.
there, you can, and this is one of those things that makes art important, because art is a manifestation of hopes, dreams, perceptions of reality. In the years before the Black Plague strikes, art is very different from after the Black Plague strikes.
Yep.
And the art after the Black Plague strikes is absolutely filled with images of death and skulls and demons and torment and agony. And you could, it's almost as though you can see in the horrors of the Black Plague humanity turn on a dime. Now, coming out of that, there was some social change. I mean, in many ways, the Black Death is the womb from which the Renaissance was born, in part. That and the collapse of Constantinople.
Yeah. Well, was that when the church took Constantinople?
Well, that's 1453.
I thought that was later, yeah.
But it's you know, they happen within 100 years of each other. And
yeah.
when there suddenly aren't enough peasants to work the wealthy's farms anymore, look at that. Labor value goes up. During the tumultuous 14th century, there were multiple uprisings of the French working and peasant class, they were referred to as the Jacquerie, and the French ruling class responded brutally, bloodthirstily, crushed them, killed them, slaughtered them wholesale for trying to demand some degree of human rights. Well, they wouldn't be able to do that after the Black Death. Because suddenly noble estates were not being worked because there weren't any people to work them.
Yeah, you don't have anybody to grow any food for these rich bastards. They're in trouble.
Yeah. No, to say that that's the same as Ferguson, Missouri would be wholly inaccurate. But the sort of hold your breath issue for me, Bill, is, and I hated myself for making the back reference, but it was to me inescapable. In the aftermath of Sandy Hook, we said, oh, by God, there's going to be some change coming now.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
They're selling more guns.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel, I sometimes feel naked because mine isn't here. I don't keep mine here anymore, my stuff here. Well, somebody... Well, they were helping me move. One of these trusty movers stole my shoulder holster. I'm not going to name any names and point any fingers, but there was a lot of really shoddy crap that went on when they were moving me. If I had paid for this, I'd been suing them, you know, over what happened to this and what happened to that, that kind of stuff. But I can't say too much, you know. I don't want to bother anybody, you know.
Yeah.
But it's true. You talked about the plague. Wasn't the plague one of the backstories to the Pied Piper of Hamelin?
I think so.
All the kids disappeared.
Well, and
my medical. No, go ahead.
No, well, and weren't there? Yeah, because it starts off. Well, it's also a tale about commercialism. Because it starts off with a town, Hamelin, that is overrun by rats, is it not?
Rats. I was going to bring them into the conversation, yes.
And so...
They were carriers for the plague, were they not?
Precisely.
They had a flea on them that...
The flea bites the rat, the flea gets plague, the flea jumps ship from rat to human. Game on.
Yeah. Because that's... I didn't know whether the children's problem was... Well, you're familiar with the Children's Crusade also, aren't you?
Oh, very much. Yeah, we talked about that the other night.
Yeah, what they did was promote these kids to get them to the seashore in Italy and then sell them to our enemies, the Muslims, our enemies. Yeah, right. Those guys were all fighting over that Mediterranean lake, you know?
Yep.
It's like the guys, some of the Islamic men on the galleys at Lepanto who escaped to the shore settled in a place called Albania. That would have been where they landed. You know, where they managed to make it to shore. Because human beings are resourceful people, probably. Survival, you know? Now, some people can survive almost anything. There's always some people who are tough enough to survive it. But, I mean, this stuff going down in Missouri, and, you know, I have a bad attitude because where was Missouri when the states were fighting each other? They were standing on the sidelines holding people's coats.
Well, and they were fighting each other. Remember Mark Twain's short story, A Brief History of a Campaign That Failed?
Yeah.
Documents his brief flirtation with being a member of a Confederate militia unit.
Yeah.
And as quick as he could, he slipped away from it and headed west when his brother Orion was named secretary to the territory of Nevada.
Okay, yeah, that was a good position to be in. A new place. It wasn't a state yet. They were, what the hell were they mining? Was it copper or silver?
Silver.
So, yeah, that was a big run there. I mean, there's always, when you look, you scrape deep enough, there's money somewhere, Bob. Large amounts of it, too. But Missouri, where John Charles Fremont was in the Army at the time, and he was very big in the Union cause until he was a total washout as a military leader between you and me.
Oh, yeah.
He may have been the great Pathfinder out west. Pathfinder, my ass, Carson was his guide. And those mountain men, you're familiar with that bunch of guys.
Oh, sure.
And you know what gave them their whole living? A style of hat, for God's sake.
Yeah, the beaver hat.
The beaver hat, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like a coonskin hat where you're wearing, you know, it looks like you're wearing a beaver on your head. No, beaver pelts were used for felting.
Yep.
For making felt. And then you get it back to the hatter who's playing around with the mercury and he works the beaver pelt with the mercury, goes crazy in the process, but makes some awesome flipping hats.
Well, when you were a kid, Bob, didn't you have a bottle with mercury in it? A ball of mercury that would roll around and...
Well, of course.
And, some of the guys would hold it in their hand and, the wonderful playthings we had in those days. Nobody, now you can't do anything.
Yeah,
now every toy that comes out, there's a warning with it, you know. But they were, I mean, that was a thing that we had to have, was mercury got your attention because of what it was. Didn't he run against Lincoln in 64? He tried to get the nomination.
No, I thought 64 was Little Mac.
Well, no, McClellan was a Democratic candidate.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember. Did Fremont run against Lincoln for the Republican nomination?
I think he was running his mouth hard. Because his wife was a member of a family in Missouri that had money. Jesse Harton Benton was, I don't know. It's been too long, but too many things. But to see this stuff, I mean, cops, I can remember cops stopped me one time. I was driving a buddy of mine home, and first words out of this idiot's mouth were always, because my buddy had long hair, young guy, younger than me, a few years, and he says, oh, is that your girlfriend? Bob, I almost choked myself to avoid saying, why don't you go ask your wife about her boyfriend? Because my mouth is, you know, you want to insult me? Let's play. And I knew a lot of cops. I was just thinking about a guy who went out and answered a call because some idiot, and I mean idiot, this guy turned out to have about a fourth grade IQ. And he was washing cars for a living, and he saved his money, and he bought a .22 rifle. And he's up around an area of Cleveland where the reservoirs are. He's firing this damn thing across a road full of cars.
Oh,
and this cop gets out to take the complaint, and the guy dropped the cop. killed him. And in fact, I was playing that night in the circle, and some about 11 o'clock at night, yeah, I can't describe this land that's up there in a gully. There's a bunch of beautiful houses built, and that backs up to this creek that runs from Shaker Lakes down to Lake Erie. Dome Brook, it's called. And they chased this guy for 3 hours or 4 hours, and they finally caught him. And the cops came into the bar after the arrest because their lieutenant grabbed this guy, and he just got him in a car because he was worried that these guys were going to, you know, go way out of line. In other words, he was trying to be a decent... I don't know what he did when he got the guy in the station. Who the hell knows? I wasn't there. But there were guys that night, after chasing this guy for 2 or 3 hours, they were mad enough to shoot him right on the spot. Huh? Would you be surprised by that?
No.
Has that ever happened before?
No,
my
but,
God.
But let's be clear. Let's be clear. There are laws to deal with specifically this.
Yeah.
Very basic criminal police procedure says that a law enforcement official may apprehend a person if that person has committed a crime in their presence.
Yeah.
Okay. They may apprehend a person if there is an arrest warrant out for that person. Or if there is some sort of a bulletin out saying this person is wanted in connection with. None, and let's be very purposeful about this, Bill, none of those things are applicable to the shooting of Michael Brown.
Nope.
The only crime that was committed in the presence of the officer, as far as anyone can tell, is the fact that he was walking in the street and not on the sidewalk.
Well, it happens all the time with kids. When I was traveling through the east side, and with my black buddies in the 70s, we called the ghetto. They had a pronunciation that was theirs, you know. You heard it a lot, and they'd walk in the streets a lot and then give you a dirty look. Especially when there's snow. Because people don't get out and shovel. Who shovels their sidewalk? Are you kidding me? Of course, where you live, what's a sidewalk, huh? But, yeah.
Well, yeah, what's a sidewalk?
What is that thing? Because people don't shovel them. Because in a lot of cases, in a lot of the neighborhoods, the residents have gotten to an age where they can't shovel anything anymore. Well, I suppose there's always somebody who can down at the neighborhood bar talking sports, and they can shovel a lot of shit. But that's conversationally, you know. Oh yeah, this stuff. And there was no reason for. I mean, there's no justification whatsoever for shooting this guy. I can't believe it. It makes me angry because, Bob, it's like watching the world go in circles. And I've seen all this stuff. And that Mayor Daley in Chicago, that whole political thing, what a lying sack of heroes. A big city politician. Well, Truman came out of Kansas City. Wasn't that the Pendergast machine down there?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Krupp machine down in
Memphis,
Tennessee there.
Oh, yeah.
Memphis?
Yeah,
there's a Memphis Blues, that New Orleans song, one of the lines of Mr. Crump don't allow no easy riders around here. And you, of course, and I know what the easy rider term, because there's a whole different language working, Bob, and maybe you and I know a lot of it, you know. Slang terms to describe things. Sometimes the slang term is even better than the English, you know, better than the business English term. You get a good idea when somebody says something, you know, what they're saying. Like I said, to me, the classic, the Spanish athlete line, which means somebody's a bull thrower. It took the bullfighting thing from Spain and used the bull and threw it into another usage. That's what is it? I don't know. I guess every language though. You can do that with, if you know the language well enough. The pun or the misnomer or the twisting of words probably can be done in every language on earth, you know. But it's just, Bob, I won't tie the phone up anymore, but I can't tell you how seeing this stuff over and over and over and being done again. And what really bothers me is how stupid are my fellow countrymen. How goddamn dumb are these people, Bob, that they'll buy this stuff?
And you know what? By the time this all shakes out, we'll know.
Well, I keep going back to work and doing two commercials for Roger Ailes in 67. But, you know, I was 67, I was 24 years old, and believe me, playing something for 7 minutes and being handed $100 was pretty good in those days, you know. So I guess I sold out at the time, but who knows? Because I'm kind of convinced.
You didn't sell out, you were paying the bills.
Yeah. You go political in this country, and you can poke holes in most of these people. I was so delighted when Clinton was elected president. Later on, I said, what the hell did we do here? You know?
Yeah.
And the Monica Lewinsky thing, big deal. Bob, you know how many business executives have mistresses? Let me think. Name any one of them just about. And you'll find a connection there. And so, because that's one of the oldest connections in the book that they like to use in espionage work. Get something on a guy there and he can destroy his career. Well, he can be bought and sold real easy. And that's what, I hate to be so cynical, Bob, but what else is there? I can't go around and my fellow man are wonderful. Yeah, a lot of them are. But a lot of them are enough to make you want to choke them. And I'm not even, violent people are bad enough, but it's these behind the scenes maneuvering and, I mean, how the hell they're getting away with that in Missouri in this day and age with the civil rights laws that we have? This guy should go on trial, at least. At least he should have to stand trial. And I don't think he'd ever have a job wearing a badge after this. Because there's just too much. Because I know I had a buddy of mine who wanted to be a policeman real bad. And he would ace everything till we got to the psychological part of the test. And they'd blow him out the back door. Because the guy was a wet job. Potentially, he'd pull a gun out of his pocket before he said good morning to somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and see,
I hate to use that expression. You know what I'm saying? I sound like a guy from West Virginia there, you know?
Well, but let's also draw a distinction here. Because you're so good at it, and our conversations turn this way. There is some difference between federal law enforcement, you know, the federal government law enforcement, and local and state law enforcement.
Yep.
I forget who it was that pointed it out, but so often it has been the case, for instance, in the civil rights struggles, that it was local, state, county law enforcement that was used to suppress the rights of others, which is also the case in Ferguson, Missouri. Whereas when it came time to enforce the rights of others, it was the National Guard in Little Rock, the National Guard in Tuscaloosa, the National Guard in Jackson, Mississippi, who were federalized and put under direct command and control,
yes, sir,
of the President of the United States. It was federal officers who went to do a fairly routine job in Bunkerville, Nevada, and didn't shoot Clive and Bundy, but instead had sniper rifles trained on them.
Yep. And see, Bundy should have never come into town or anything, or he wasn't covered by these idiots, because he'd been arrested. But they won't do it. It's like the Texas case where they burned the house full of... under Clinton, you know, what was that situation? Religious leader. That guy should have been pulled off the street. You know?
Yeah.
Well, why did we send soldiers into Panama? Well, you don't think the CIA or anybody who trained in it couldn't have grabbed Noriega? Come on.
Yeah.
I know better than that. Cynical I may be. But I'll open the line for somebody here. But as I say, this is like, what's the expression I used to hear a lot? What goes around comes around.
Or chickens coming home to roost.
Yep. We're back in a bad spot. And it's amazing that the folks down there haven't taken these guys' attacks. But, you know, years ago, when the political thing was going on in some countries, a guy like this cop, somebody would nail him somewhere along the line. Somebody would get him. I mean, that was the way the Europeans seemed to do business, or the Asians too. They took out your opponents. But you know, that was how it worked. Revolutions. Like, I'd love to really know more about the American Revolution and how much was done to the guys who didn't fall on your side of the program, you know?
Yeah. Well, the Tories, a lot of them just up and left.
Yep.
Many of them went to Canada. Some of them went back to England or to other British possessions.
Well, you know where the Cajuns come from, don't you?
Yeah. That's the Acadians who were forced out of French Canada by the British.
And why voodoo is big in New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
Haiti.
Yeah. There's little spider web strings between all these things, and we wind up with the Louisiana Purchase because Napoleon had figured out he couldn't even afford to keep Haiti.
No. Yeah, that led, of course, eventually to the war with Mexico. So we could have this magnificent Gadsden for freedom for it. Because I'll tell you a quick story here, which is the irony of life. A couple of guys who were stationed in Mexico City after the war had very negative attitudes toward the Mexican War. And one was Ulysses Simpson Grant. Old Sam himself, Sam Grant, and the other was Thomas Jonathan Jackson. Old Stonewall. They didn't think that we had much business messing in Mexico. And
we didn't.
The matter, right?
But again, there's another one of those little spider web strands, and it runs from the Mexican War all the way back to Aaron Burr.
Yep.
Because almost from the moment that the country got a constitution and got its feet under it, people started looking west and southwest and saying, you know what? We need Mexico, too.
Yep.
And that was the essence of the treason charge against Aaron Burr, which is one of the more tawdry episodes in Thomas Jefferson's existence, because he behaved absolutely contrary to everything that he had ever espoused. And he used the full force of the federal government to try to destroy Aaron Burr. He wanted Aaron Burr hanged.
Yep.
And nobody to this day can actually pinpoint exactly what it was that Aaron Burr wanted, because Aaron Burr didn't let anyone know what Aaron Burr wanted.
Yeah, he was a funny guy.
And he lived to, and here's the thing, he lived to a ripe, ripe old age, went abroad for a while, but eventually came back and practiced law in New York City to the end of his days.
Yep. Well, I'll leave you with one. You're familiar with Dashiell Hammett, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And unfortunately, you never have seen the short story collection of the Continental Op.
No, I've only read Red Harvest. You mentioned that. I got to get that.
If you can find it, it's out there. The library has it here, a collection of short stories, and the one that stands out, two of them, one is called Corkscrew, and the other is Dead Yellow Woman, and the fat man, you know, the detective, gets sent to the border of something that wasn't a state yet when he wrote it, which probably was Arizona. When did Arizona become a state, 14?
I thought it was 12.
Or 12.
Yeah.
12, okay. And what was the one part of the backstory of that book was people running the border. And then the other one, The Dead Yellow Woman, was considered was about San Francisco, where another important aspect was running, guys were running immigrants from Asia. Illegally, and you know, this stuff has been going on for so long that I don't know why all of a sudden they don't want immigrants. These guys never seem to not want cheap labor, do they, Bob?
It's the one thing they want more than anything else on earth, Bill.
Yes, I thought so. That's just the way it is. Anyway, as I say, this thing is heart-sickening to me because I don't know what. So even if the guy stole some cigars, holy Christ, tell me, how many, geez, line them up for shoplifting. Oh, they're coming for me now. I got a few, I was collecting stamps, you know, you had to grab a couple of those here and there. But as I say, my favorite thing in the basement of the 5 and 10 cent stores was watching guys try to demonstrate some gadget and watching the hecklers line up and go back and forth with the salesman. That was a cheap entertainment, you know. Hecklers were cheap entertainment to me. Hell, I would join in with the hecklers when I got a shot, you know. Take a chance.
Because you're incorrigible, right?
Yes, what you're missing. Well, I was talking to my aide today about a little game called the Dirty Dozens. You're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been backtracked to an African thing, a game of, and these guys were literally friends and they'd stand around and come up with insults about each other. And you usually tried to top the other guy. That's what you tried to do. I mean, God almighty, you know how many comics made a fortune out of insulting people?
Well,
that was the name of the game.
Don Rickles comes to mind.
You got that right away. That's, you know, when I say I was blessed to be able to see Youngman and Rodney and the weatherman, Carlin. To see them live was a, whoa, you know, great thing. Anyway, you go on and hope somebody is there to talk but this stuff is, when you mentioned Emmett Till, that's like sticking with a red-hot poker in my right ear and having it come out the left, you know.
Yeah.
People will tell you there's nothing there to stop it, so go ahead, you know. Anyway, take care.
All right, we'll see you, Bill. Take it easy.
Good night.
Do me a favor. That's our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Hold calls for a minute because I'm told that here in a little bit we're going to be hearing from longtime horn maintainer of all things technical, webmaster, presently touring musician, John Fox. And before that, though, a couple of stories. Because Ferguson, Missouri is in the limelight. And the nature of the news cycle is such that when things are in the limelight, they tend to take up all the attention. Once upon a time, I used to write 5-minute newscasts, and no story could be longer than 20 seconds so that you could hopefully, and remember, a minute and a half of that was commercials. So you were actually writing 3.5 minutes of news. No story to be longer than 20 minutes, no reader to be longer than 20 seconds, no reader including audio to be longer than 40 or so. And you can hit a few stories that way. But both the blessing and the curse of this format that we have sort of pioneered here is that it gives us all the time in the world that we want with just about anything we want to talk about. But it also means that some stuff goes by the wayside. And a lot of times, I'll get commentary saying, yeah, you didn't talk about this, you didn't talk about that. But in many cases, and Ferguson is one of them, I can safely presume that this has been the topic of discussion of just about everybody doing this. I hope that we are talking about it in a different way from how others are talking about it. But at the same time, there are commonalities involved. There are things that are happening in other parts of the country that can be shared in common, subject matter-wise, topic-wise, with Ferguson and Ferguson with the rest of the country. Oh, by the way, thank you very much to Steve for issuing the challenge, and thank you to Jan and Jerry in Vegas for answering it. We are now only $80 away from meeting the evening goal. Eight folks, $10, five bucks by 20 folks, whatever combination is deeply appreciated and very definitely necessary in trying to keep this, keep all the little plates spinning in the air. Tweet coming in from Isaac. The FAA flight restrictions over Ferguson, Missouri have been extended to August the 25th. Aircraft are restricted from flying under 3,000 feet in the area. You know, a no-fly zone. So we're not going to have any civilians getting up in the air trying to document what's going on. Or, you know, media outlets trying to get footage. Because why? Because somebody, some protester is going to throw a Molotov cocktail? No, it is so that the air itself, the airspace above Ferguson, can be militarized. But like I said, there are other things. Let's take a quick jaunt down to Georgia. According to WTOC, down near Savannah, Georgia, on the Atlantic coast, a group of middle and high school students were waiting for the bus. School has started in many areas of the country now. School has been, the opening of the school year has been delayed in Ferguson and Florissant, Missouri, because of the number of, dangerous weapons in the streets. I'm not talking about peaceful protesters. Anyway, the students were standing at the bus stop. It's the first of the year. They're excited. They're noisy. They're loud. They're chattery. That's when 28-year-old Jason Zimmerman comes out of his house. And according to the students, one of the students said he came out and he was really approaching the kids, you know, cussing and using profanity. And he came out and said, "I have a bullet with your name written on it." Meanwhile, since it's the word of a child against an adult, 28-year-old Jason Zimmerman, he said, "Oh, that's ridiculous. I don't know why they would say that or where they come up with that." He says he came out to tell the students to be quiet at the bus stop, waiting, be quiet. And that they then began using foul language. And he went inside to call police. "I turned around to go walk up to my house to get my cell phone to call the police. And he ran home, I guess because he could see my gun." The he is the student. "I never reached back for my gun. I never touched my gun at any time." Well, the report is that he said, "I got a bullet here with your name on it." Didn't say he drew the gun. I mean, there's no way I could have taken this out and they seen it, they would have known what color it was. That's the only way I can get it out, to get the magazine, to get the bullet out of the gun. "I understand they're kids. I've been there, done that. What upsets me is they're not respectful enough to go down the street and do it where no one lives." Do what? Yeah, students did say that he showed them bullets in the gun. But here's the thing. We're talking about a neighborhood in Georgia where, even if the kids are being a little bit rowdy, you really don't need to take a firearm with you. By the way, did I mention that Jason Zimmerman is not a man of color? He's white folks. He has been charged by the Savannah-Chatham Metropolitan Police with terroristic threats. And you know what? I'll even say that's BS, terroristic threats. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned common law assault? Because that's what it was. Putting someone in fear of receiving an immediate bodily harm of an immediate touching of an insulting or provoking nature. That's just assault. Terroristic threats. Now, when the news crew shows up to interview Mr. Zimmerman, he says, "Well, it's right here. See, I got it in my holster and a clip, and I got it stuffed down my pants here. If it goes off, I'm gonna blow little Zimmerman right off the universe." Jesus. Yeah. In America, in 2014, if you are a terrified white man, you need to carry a pistol with you to go and ask the middle and high school students to please be a little more quiet because your head is pounding from last night's hangover or whatever. I mean, I just carry a gun. Dang. That's America. That's how we protect freedom around here. Let's stay in Georgia. Stay in Georgia for a minute. Fifty-three-year-old Glenn Patrick Lampion was out and about in the tourist town of Helen, Georgia, lots of restaurants. There was once a minor gold rush in that area of the North Georgia Mountains. There's a German restaurant there called the Old Heidelberg. It's also a bar. There are many Bavarian-themed businesses in Helen. Helen's about 90 miles northeast of downtown Atlanta. At 10:41 p.m. Saturday, the Helen, Georgia Police Department responded to a call of shots fired. That's where they found Glenn Patrick Lampion sitting on a bench with a bloodied up hand. Across the street, a woman from Texas had also been shot. She's dead now. Because Glenn Patrick Lampion, who lives around thereabouts, apparently could not go down to have a little, have a little schnitzel and beer without taking his Freedom Protector with him. Employees at the Old Heidelberg restaurant have been instructed by police not to speak to reporters. How about that? I didn't know the police could do that, did you? I didn't know that the police had the power to say, "Now listen, if anybody comes around here wanting to know about old Glenn Patrick there and whether or not he was liquored up off of his ass when he came in here with his Freedom Protector and then went back out into the public and accidentally shot himself in the hand and the stray bullet went across the street and killed a woman from Texas, you tell him you ain't going to talk to no reporters. You understand? We don't need no outside agitators around here." by the way, as the Atlanta Journal-Constitution notes in the story by Alan Judd, the incident happened about 2 months after the governor of Georgia signed into law a bill that took effect and allows people to carry their freedom protectors into restaurants and bars. There is, of course, a group of gun goobers in Georgia named Georgia Packing. See? And they immediately posted to their little old website, of course, HB60 will be blamed. HB60 is the, if you've got a gun, please take it with you when you're going to go get liquored up at the Bavarian restaurant. Yeah. For shorthand, the Georgia law is referred to simply as guns everywhere. Mr. Lampion is from Georgia, Jasper, Georgia. His wife told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that he is recovering, and she has no idea what happened, and law enforcement said he would be charged with involuntary manslaughter. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out in court. Of course, it won't be interesting for the woman from Texas's family. They're busy with a funeral and a grieving process because their loved one had the misfortune of going to Helen, Georgia, where she couldn't walk down the other street without so much as speaking to anybody without having some drunk freedom protector would shoot himself in the hand and send the stray through some portion of her body sufficiently to cause her to cease existing. Wolverines. Man, you just taste the freedom, doesn't it? Can't you? Tastes a little bit like the bloody tang you get when you accidentally bite your tongue or your lip, and it's kind of sharp and iron-tasting, like blood. Staying in Georgia, this story goes back to almost a week ago, last Tuesday, when a man in Bartow County, Georgia, went on a shooting spree. 20-year-old Austin Denzel Tyler of Cartersville fired his pistol at 12 people, pointed his gun at several more as he went on what's described as a 12 to 15 minute rampage, killed one. Yeah. Then he went off into the county. Tried to carjack a couple of vehicles. Finally got hold of a Ford Explorer. And then went and shot himself. Investigators believe the rampage started with an argument between Tyler and one of the shooting victims. Freedom, you know. Hey, John Fox, are you with us?
I am, man. I am. Can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear.
Awesome. How's life doing?
I'm getting a little nervous about this here country, John.
I was going to say that was kind of a loaded question.
Now you're working my side of the street. Loaded question. Thank you.
We haven't done this for a while, Bob.
Yeah, it's like falling off a bicycle.
Yeah. So you're talking about guns again. Funny subject that comes up in America.
Yeah. You don't sit around talking about the latest shooting spree deaths in most of the civilized world.
It's true, man. It's true. And I'll tell you, I just had an incident where I'm really glad that it happened down here in Australia, man. I'm glad that I wasn't somewhere in the United States. I have a neighbor, a lovely woman, but every once in a while, she forgets to take her medication, and she has a slight break. And, you know, pretty harmless, mostly. It's mostly kind of barricading herself in her backyard. But we had an incident in this recently, and she was kind of off with the fairies for about 3 days. And when I finally decided that it was time to notify family or something, that something was obviously up, and I started paying some attention, this person saw me paying attention, decided to go to walkabout. So when I found her up on a street corner, she had a barbecue lighter in her hand, but she was at the top of the street branding a shit as though it were a gun and just firing like, you know, one of those back and forth sprinklers, Bob, you know, that just kind of goes back and forth in a circular motion.
Yeah.
That's what she was doing to like every car that went by. And then when she spotted me, she turned it right on me, going click, 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 click. And all I could think was, I'm so glad I don't live in America anymore.
I'm so glad she isn't.
Oh, yeah. And she and I, she's home. And, you know, she'll be fine. But I mentioned this to her. And I said, and she just, you know, kind of looked at me in shock horror, you know. And I said, you know, I'm just really, really glad that you weren't able to walk into some, you know, bloody gun show and be able to sign off and walk off with a weapon in which you could have stood up there and not only hurt yourself, but possibly hurt a whole lot of other people, unbeknownst to you. And as I spoke with my neighbors about this and telling them, because we were all concerned and we were trying to, you know, locate her and get her help and all that, I make the comment about, I'm glad this wasn't the United States. And you can watch the penny drop. And they're like, wow, we wouldn't have even had to have considered that. And I'm like, yeah. But as soon as that cigarette lighter was pointed at me and being fired, no matter how kind of silly that sounds, just replace that with a gun, and I wouldn't be having this conversation with you now.
No, you would not. And let's understand something. Somewhere in America, that or something like it is probably playing out right now, John. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you mentioned a gun show. You ever been to one, John?
You know, I don't know if I ever really had the desire. To be honest, I don't think I've ever actually been to a gun show. Even when I lived in Texas, when, you know, there's kind of like one on every corner. Just, sorry.
No, well,
my Willy works. I don't need one.
Yeah, see. Right. I have. Not because, I really didn't, you know, I think I'm going to go get me a gun. No, I've been to them because, well, they kind of came to me.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, the reason I asked, John, is because when you said if she had gone to a gun show, do you have, and this is not a rhetorical question, do you have any idea the absolute circus-like atmosphere of a gun show? I mean, there's somebody popping popcorn, and maybe there's a little baked goods sale for to buy the little children targets at the local gun range and ammunition, and maybe they're selling Slurpees and cotton candy. I'm not kidding.
I don't doubt it, man. I don't doubt it. You know,
and then there's
just like any other convention, except that this one's kind of promoting things that kill people.
Well, there's that, and then there's the folks who go to them. Now, there's your ordinary run-of-the-mill range of, You know, I got me a 1941 German Luger here, and I'd like to sell it or swap it for maybe one of them Dirty Harry 44 Magnums or two. I mean, it's a valuable gun. And so there's a whole lot of horse trading and dickering going on. But the other thing is, you know, as long as you've got a pulse, and remember, you got to pay money to get into these things because they're money-making affairs first and foremost.
Yeah.
So you pay your $5 or your $7.50 or your $10 or whatever, and you walk through the door. The pulse and the pulse and the bucks are all that's required.
I know.
And so, you know, it's nothing to walk through a gun show and see, you know, and see a guy saying, wearing a T-shirt saying, "Where's the birth certificate?"
Ah, yeah, and it would just be a self-feeding little circular wanking squad.
Right, and so, you know, I can see her. I can see her walking in and somebody's selling a firearm. You know, you cannot tell in 20 seconds or a minute unless somebody comes in dressed as Zippy the Clown, and they can buy a gun too, how well connected to reality a person is. This is not a matter of making sport or light of people with mental illness. No, 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 no. But
that's the whole point. That's the whole point. The situation over in the United States is so insane that this idea of the purity of the Second Amendment, you know, which has been completely just lost all context, has become this thing that there can be no reason that you can ever be denied a weapon, no matter how unbalanced, no matter what your record, and we will question every other thing about you except for your mental stability to handle that gun.
Yeah. And that's based on self-reporting, John. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right, we're almost done here. I got a little form to fill out here. Ever been convicted of a felony? No. Ever been convicted of a misdemeanor? No. Addicted to drugs? No. Addicted to alcohol? No. Mentally ill? The voices tell me I'm not. Good! That'll be $357. Here you go. Happy hunting while I'm shooting.
Pardon me while I ask my other self.
There you go. Are you known to be mentally ill? I don't know. Are we? I don't think so. What does he think? No, we're not. We're fine.
We've had a committee meeting. Yeah, look, it's still one of the reasons that I hold high of why I love living where I live is I can have an altercation verbally with someone on the street or, you know, in the car, and the worst that's going to happen is someone's going to get out of the car and we might throw a punch. I don't have to worry about every vehicle being loaded to the teeth where it's like, you looked at me wrong, bang. Because, I mean, that's what it's getting to be like over there. I mean, what was this? Some of the stuff I've been reading coming from the States recently, I mean, what's been going on in Ferguson's a shocker. But the one that really got me recently, just as an isolated incident, which just speaks volumes about what's going on over there, was this thing about the security guard ignoring the racist nutter screaming abuse and just turns to, like, his left and shoots the black fella who's not even involved with what's going on.
Right, and that's
just like,
and
you
remember,
have a guy screaming hateful shit right there, being aggressive, but yet will turn to the guy of color and spray him, and he's done nothing. And this is, and I don't know if you saw the thing that Melissa Harris Perry did.
I did.
On the weekend.
I did.
And the end bit, the black man has no rights that the white man has to respect, I think was what she was saying, that from that court decision years ago. And I think that this is the mentality that all these people still carry.
Oh, I think so.
And it's all, you know, seems to be a tolerated thing. And it's...
Yeah, because it's not... well, You probably weren't listening at the top of the program. Fox News and Sean Hannity have begun yodeling about the new Black Panthers being in Ferguson. And Louis Farrakhan.
So what?
Yeah, here's a little thought experiment. What happens? Because this, I mean, you want to talk about putting somebody in a box. What's the NRA going to do? What are the Gadsden flag carriers going to do? What are the teabaggers going to do if, in a moment of sublimely ill-informed rashness, a bunch of people in Ferguson walk into the protest crowd and say they've all got AK-47s? What are you going to do? Now, when that happened in Bunkerville, Nevada, when the teabaggers and white folks were putting crosshairs on the heads of federal civil servants, mercifully there was no killing. But those were federal civil servants. What happens in Ferguson if somebody shows up with a firearm? Or several somebodies. How long before the massacre starts, John? And then the Freedom Protector Woods and the Gadsden flag carriers and the teabaggers and the birchers all begin to holler, "See, the government's putting its jackbooted thug boots down on our freedom-loving necks."
And, you know, they're not out there screaming about the fact that there's been a curfew put on a complete innocent community. I mean, it's all lip service.
Well, it's all race-based. I mean, let's face it.
Oh, yeah, it's race-based lip service.
I woke up this morning, John, to news that Amnesty International has deployed a team of observers to Ferguson, Missouri. And even sitting there with my morning decaf, you know, the best I can muster is a well fuck. Not that I'm angry at Amnesty International, but that's how far it's gotten.
Well, do you know that most of the international press is sending their war reporters?
Yes.
To Ferguson?
Yeah. Because frankly, you don't want the person who handles the politics beat or the style section in a situation where bullets can start flying, because war correspondents actually know how to deal with that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's that dangerous. It's that dangerous out there.
And but when we say that, John, let's understand something. It's not that dangerous because of the people who are standing in the streets aggrieved over the slaughter of an 18-year-old man whose body was left on the street in the August heat for 5 hours.
It's dangerous. Escalation.
It's dangerous because there is a militarized army of police standing in the streets with weapons that were last seen in the streets of Fallujah, who didn't deserve it either.
Bingo. It was amazing to me that it took so long for it to become kind of a thing in the media, but finally it's grabbed on. And I think when this all first blew up, Chris Hayes was reporting on it and showed some of the pictures and talked to the, why are these police officers in jungle camo? Why? And they're in the middle of an urban place or a suburban place. Why the camo? There can only be one reason to be wearing that shit, sorry, when facing citizens. And that is intimidation.
To project a very specific image and intent. By the way, you just got a note from Kate out on the front range. She said, "Oh, so good to hear you." "How I miss those late night gigs on the horn. Hope you and Gail are well. Loving your music. Thank you for the work you do. Without you, we would be so, so cold and silent."
Thank you.
Because see, and you know, there's a lot of folks who probably, this may be the first time they've ever heard you, John.
But yeah,
they,
I know.
But they don't know that on the evenings when things stop working, you know, I collapse into a little fetal ball, suck my thumb for a little bit, and then push the button on Skype and say, "Help me, John. Help me."
How long have we been doing this, Bob? 10 years?
10 years.
Jeez. And we've still never met face to face.
Never. I'm saving my nickels, you know.
I just keep hoping the album's gonna pay for me to come on tour.
Oh, that would be awesome. All I gotta do is just cover my entire body in nicotine patches for the 20-hour flight, and I'm good.
Hey man, I'm 2 years without.
I know, and I'm proud of you.
And the first time I quit that I blew 50 was because I didn't want a Jones on a plane. And I was glad that I did it then, upset that I blew it, and I'm glad that I've done it again.
And
I don't want to have to do that again, because I remember doing the flight to Europe and just jonesing and losing my mind. And I'm like, never again.
No, I think, the ride from Atlanta to Paris, not that it was hell or anything, but steerage there where I was riding is kind of cramped anyway if you're 6'2" and, you know, 250 or so.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get comfortable, and I wasn't on an aisle seat, because those cost extra now, by the way. I don't know how long it's been since you've been on a ride like that, but you pay extra for an aisle seat. And by the time we landed at CDG, man, I couldn't get through customs and outside the airport fast enough. It's a terrible thing to be to be an addict. But no, all kidding aside, yeah. Go ahead and tell. How's the album doing? How's the band doing? How's it being received?
It's being received well. Look, the big push really comes in September. When we do our official launch in Sydney. There's a funny thing down here. We needed to get the record out for getting on festivals and things down here. And so we kind of had it a little cart before the horse with distribution and whatnot. And so we've got the launch, like I said, beginning of September, and then that's when the big push will be on. But been selling copies all over the world. Been a whole bunch going to, because of Dye's connection with Rose Tattoo, there's a huge kind of fan base out of France and Russia and Italy for Rose Tattoo. So there's a lot of people finding the album via Rose Tattoo. And yeah. It's all going well. I expect some reviews to be starting to pop up soon. And, yeah. It's the modern music biz. No record's ever going to make $1 million, but it's the way that you get your sound out there to get booked to play actual shows.
And that's the thing. It's all in the touring now, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is. You know, you got to be able to do it. You got to be able to actually play. And you can actually make a living in the modern music industry. But that's the thing. You can't be a faker. You got to be able to do it, because at least over here, people are going back out to pubs to go and see people play because they're sick and tired of hollow, idle nonsense. America's got no talent. You know, these TV machines that just eat children up and spit them out. For the entertainment of people on television, I think people are starting to get tired of it. People that actually like music, as opposed to those that want to watch just another reality TV deathmatch, which is, that's not what music's supposed to be. So anyone out there who watches any of that Idol or anything else, if you actually like music, stop. You're doing the absolute worst thing for music that you could possibly do by watching and supporting that. I don't care how.
Yeah, get out and see the people at your work in your local scene.
Well, and it's not only that, but you know, as you sit there going, "Oh, isn't little 16-year-old Johnny really, really cute up there on telly? Isn't that great?" You know what? While you're being entertained by his little story, that TV machine is eating that kid for lunch.
Oh,
as soon as that show's over, they're going to dump him. I'm going to leave him with a bunch of debt and no future. But some old idiot like Simon Cowell has made another squillion off of the flesh of young people. Rant over.
No, that's okay. And because money.
Yeah, because money. Because money and because, you know, the record industry likes to complain about downloads. Downloads really aren't the problem. I'll tell you what the problem is, Bob. It's releasing shit.
Yeah, crap.
Because, you know what? Tool still sells millions of records. Foo Fighters still sell millions of records. Now, there's a lot of stuff being downloaded. But the thing that people find out is once someone likes some music, and they're real music fans, they want to go and buy it because they actually want the full wave version of the music.
Yeah. And they want to support the artist.
Bingo! And the tactile, even with a CD, the tactile thing of having it. The artwork, you know,
yeah.
And touching it, and actually going, this is a physical thing, which makes it much more real for the listener, I think. You know, it's a physical thing. It's not just some bunch of bits that you downloaded that are disposable, that are virtual. But once you have that thing in your hand, even if you rip it and put it on your eye thing, you still have that physical thing, and suddenly it actually has more credence and value to the owner. And I'll tell you, there's a little film out there, and I'll send you the link to it, Bob. This is really fascinating. There's a little doco that came out in the last couple of months about a push to return to full bandwidth music. Right?
I haven't seen what you're talking about, but I've read quite a bit about it.
Now, because I know you're running out of time, but check this out. They ran this thing, they did a thing called the head bob test, okay? They got a whole bunch of people that were into all different types of music and put them in a room. And they started just playing different tracks, and sometimes they play them in MP3 format, sometimes they play them in full waveform, full bandwidth CD file. And what was really interesting, so just for an example, they play a hip-hop tune, but they play, the first time they play it, they play the MP3 version, the best quality MP3 they could possibly rip. And the people that were into that kind of music bobbed their heads. Later on in the process, they played the same exact track, but the full waveform version, 5 times as many people bobbed their heads. MP3s are robbing people of the experience. And this is why. You know how vision, your eyes actually don't see a whole picture. They scan and the brain fills in the bits, right?
Yeah, sure.
Hearing does the same thing. And just like now, as you and I are speaking and our voices are being converted to an MP3-like file, it's making guesses of what your ear needs to hear to make you believe that it's me.
Yes.
That's what MP3s do. It's the same thing, kind of, as your vision.
It's even the same principle behind the most modern forms of cell phone technology.
Well, yeah. So, because it's all based on these, on this idea, it's making an educated guess at what your ear needs to hear. So, if you are already attuned to the style of music, your brain can fill in the missing information for your own enjoyment. But it means that music will not be as accessible to the people that are not as attuned to it. So, this could even be driving the musical divisions in the industry.
Wow. So you'll send me the link and I'll share it out?
Yeah. And it's just really, really fascinating when I heard about the fact that five times as many heads bob to the same song, and it's even music that they're not into. And it just shows you the power of the actual organic noise.
And, of course, there remain the purists out there who say if it's not analog and it's not on vinyl, it ain't crap. Because we don't hear digitally, John. The human ear is an analog device.
And you know what? In full wave format, there's nothing wrong with it. Really, there's not. We've gotten the dithering and all that stuff since this technology first started. You can really do a lot of good stuff with it. But the problem is we've wanted to make it where we can have everything and make it really quick and really small. And it's the small inconvenience that has taken all of the character and all the harmonic content out of the music that you hear, and it's simplified it, and it's dumbed our hearing down.
So is the new album, Killin' Time, is there a lossless version?
The lossless version will be available within days.
Cool. Since we are kind of running short, do make sure that people know how to, because you drum on this album, and it is some, I played a couple of tracks along the way, and it is some kick-ass rock and roll. By all means, let folks know how they can get it.
You can just go to DaiPritchard.com, DaiPritchard.com, and you can get a free download of Big Man Movin', and there's digital and physical versions of the CD available, and go have a listen. I hope you dig it. It's all real. It was all played live. There's no computer trickery. It's all the real deal, band in a room.
And Di Pritchard can play the strings right off a guitar.
He's a freak, man. He's a freak. I put him up there with Eddie Van and Hendrix, and he's just got that explosive quality. And I sit back sometimes going, how did I get here?
lucky me.
Yes. Anyway, Bob, I'll let you go, man. This has been great fun, dude.
Oh, it's fun having you back for a little bit, John. Take care.
All right, man. You have a good one.
All right,
bye-bye.
That's Brother John Fox. I mean, a colleague doesn't even count it. John and I have been working on this for 10 years. Yeah. Thanks, John, for ringing in. Because that's kind of... The story he rang in about is kind of terrifying in its own right. It's the difference between a civilized country and an uncivilized one. In the United States of America, what happened to John Fox in Australia means John Fox is in a box. Dig? Time to get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for all you do to keep all of this going, your contributions via ideas, conversation, your participation in the chat room, your participation via email, Twitter, Facebook, what have you, your calls, and, yes, your financial contributions. We managed to meet Steve's challenge this evening. Thank you to Jan and Jerry and to Sal. Thank you very kindly. We pulled up about 80 bucks short, but that's okay. Thank you one and all to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy, all of the moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Sheena, it's all for you.